Hey, gay ass girlies. I just read a romance horror book that I think you'd be absolutely obsessed with. Listen to this. It's called House of Rain by New York Times bestselling author Harley LaRue. And at first I was nervous it would be too scary, but y'all, it's scary and horny. And as a newly self-identified slut, I feel seen. Also, it takes place on a remote island in the Pacific Northwest, which I think the Pacific Northwest canonically has the hottest people. So if that doesn't make you squirt, babe, I don't know what will. Also, the book has so many gay-ass themes. I'm talking family drama, there's rumors, manipulation, and again, it's horny as hell. Now, the writing is also so good that it moves real fast and there's kink in it, and you will not be able to put this down. Harley LaRue is a queer writer who gets it. You can find House of Rain by Harley LaRue wherever books are sold in print and an ebook. The gorgeous deluxe hardcover first printing is only available for a limited time, so grab yours before they are gone, babe.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
What?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
The charming, the handsome Gabe Gonzalez is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast for a horny bonus episode. Gabe, are you having a gorgeous gay day or is it boring and straight?
A little bit of both, if that makes sense. I was recently sucked into the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. I've never been a Housewives person before.
Welcome.
I was radicalized this week. And
did you start with season one or are you starting with the current season?
So I'd been exposed to like the Monica finale, whenever that was.
Sure.
Which was great. Like biblical proportions of drama, like really just the setup, exceptional editing, great television. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, this is a one-off. Like I've tried other seasons. And then we were watching Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. My boyfriend used it as an excuse to reel his way in. And now we're at the season two finale. And I think someone just threw a Cinco de Mayo party because Mary Cosby called her a thug, like one of those Mexicans that makes drugs.
Tough.
So Jen Shaw's clap was naturally to celebrate Latinidad with the Cinco de Mayo party.
The fact that we can point to so many now housewives who have been imprisoned. I mean, Jen Shaw, obviously, spoiler alert, does go to jail. The next season coming up of Potomac, Karen Huger is released from prison. And I don't really talk too much about housewives on the pod, but I am a big watcher. I find that we're in an interesting era where I'm like, a lot of the housewives have fallen off, but they have been there for me since the job. And I've always been a Bravo girly, so I'm thrilled for your journey. I also love that you've mentioned a boyfriend. You have given us some Easter eggs of things I need to dive in on. But I just want to tell you my exciting news, which is that I'm wearing a tank top that I got at a gay birthday party clothing swap. And this is my first time ever wearing it. And I wanted to wear it for a gorgeous man like you, Gabe.
Oh, thank you. Can I get the full effect? What's happening here? Yes, there we go.
It's literally a Calvin Klein. It's literally a Calvin Klein.
Oh, I thought that was a good design.
I know, it's literally. I went to this birthday party and you bring clothes that you don't want to wear anymore. And then you grab, and it's mostly junk. But you get a few cute things. I got some cute little booty shorts. I got to watch a couple guys take their shirts off. So it was all gays swapping clothes, which I thought was a genius idea for a birthday.
See, I love this. I feel like it would be tough to do in Brooklyn because it would depend on the borough. In LA did you do this clothing? So I'm just curious.
It was at our friend. So my friend's, basically he lives in the back house of his friend's house. So his friend has like a house. It's on the east side. It was like, I guess, Atwater Village. It's like not too far from Echo Park. All the east side gays were there. So there was a beautiful like, you know, garden area and they had a whole setup for it. But yeah, the good thing about it, there's like a charitable effect, which is that any of the clothes that aren't taken, they just take to out of the closet, the LGBTQ, you know, clothing donation spots. So yeah, it felt like a healthy way to get gay guys to take their shirts off.
That's a really wonderful excuse. I really see. I'm over here thinking of the health hazards. I'm like, oh, I would inevitably get bite bugs if I did. Inevitably, I know. Like, let's not. You're already wearing the beautiful tank top. It's great. You own it. You have it.
Have you ever gone through the nightmare of the BBs?
Yeah. once.
And bad. I'm so sorry for your loss. I lived in New York for 13 years, and the scepter of, I won't even say the full, I'll just call them BBs. The BBs, I can't say it because the fear, some of my first panic attacks were because of those.
They were a formative influence in some of my earliest panic attacks, which many people in LA know now.
Yeah, my blue period. Yeah. Truly do not love that part about living in a big city. But you yourself have lived in New York City for how long?
Oh my God. I haven't done this math in a while. I moved here December 2012. And so I want to say I've been here almost 13 years now.
Wow. Mazel tov. Well, I feel like I should have given the listeners a bit of your stats before I grill you. But for those who don't know, Gabe is an incredible comedian. He also is a stunning writer. And you work with Sniffies on their podcast, Cruising Confessions, which is a huge fucking hit. We also have some funny crossover. Because you worked on, you hosted Scruff's trivia show back in the day called Hosting, and I wrote a few jokes for that, and I was up for the hosting job, and when I found out it was you, I actually waited this long to troll you to your face. So this, the rest, I'm gonna stop being nice and just say, how dare you take the job that was truly should have been yours. I should not have.
Love that. I love that you've been waiting over a decade. No, not over, almost a decade for a takedown. I'm a Scorpio. I can appreciate that kind of dedication. I would do that.
Yeah, well, I also have another takedown, which is that when I was planning this glory hole talk show that I host mm-hmm. called Confession Hole, my original title was Cruising Confessions, and then I was like, okay, this is the title, and then my husband had to be like, you can't do that title, and I was like, why? He goes, Sniffies just came out with a podcast called Cruising Confessions, and honestly, though, it's a stunning title, it's a stunning pod, and it all worked out because you got to keep that great title, and I got to somehow come up with a different one, and now we get to talk about gay sluttery on this gay-ass pod.
Yeah, and you've had many a daddy on the other side of that gory hole. You've done very well with your bathroom stalls.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. That it's my pleasure to get on my knees and get all of the information from hot people, much like yourself. In fact, in this interview series, I like to talk about some of our OG sluttery. Do you identify with that word slut if we think about it with purely a positive connotation? What does the word slut mean to you?
Yeah, I do. And I've actually been talking to a lot of friends about how, like, being a slut is very in, or at least performing slutness is very in right now, right? Yeah. I think it's this sort of, like, natural extension of, like, I don't know, this wave of sex positivity with this, like, initial feeling of empowerment that came with some treatments like PrEP. And then also just sort of, like, I don't know, the, like, post-gay marriage euphoria where all the, like, monogamous gays were like, wait, maybe we should be experimental now. Like, I think it was just the perfect storm. I do identify as a slut. I feel like I've been a long term, like I've put in the mileage.
Yeah.
My first job out of college was working for a porn studio, which was fun. And that was sort of the formal education in like how far on the slut scale I was versus where I thought I was. Cause like I got,
what was your role with this porn studio?
I started as an editor. This was like seventh month couch surfing in New York, and I went to Craigslist and just kind of spammed every video editor position, and I went to this one interview, and it was like a live workspace on the top floor of a walk-up on like East 89th or something like that, and the man that greeted me was this like grumpy older gay man, and I walk in, they hadn't told me what the editing position was for. They were just like, we need someone to edit like documentary style explicit or adult content. And I was like, okay, whatever. Like, maybe it's like some weird, like, softcore Cinemax. I have no idea. And I walk in, it was like fully Treasure Island. And I was like, oh, okay. I know the brothers with the marimbas playing in the background. Like, I know your work.
Now, when you say fully Treasure Island, it was Treasure Island Media.
It was. Yeah, they had a New York office at the time. I think they still do. I have no idea. But yeah, I worked there for like 2.5 years. It was my very, very first job out of college. So I was like,
that's not a short amount of time.
No, not at all. It was crazy.
Like, you worked there. You said, honey, I'm going to the office for 2.5 years. And were you ever on set for the actual shoots, or were you kind of getting the dailies? And then what was the the BTS of the actual.
Yeah, I did. I got a promotion, but it's because another one of my coworkers like quit the day of a shoot. Like went to TGI Fridays, came back drunk, like smashed their laptop and was like, I'm out. So they were like, we need another cameraman. And naturally, it was me. And then they started using me a lot because they could kind of leverage my height. I know you're a very tall man. I'm 5'6". So what they would do is put me on a skateboard on my back, holding a camera up and just slide me. Not even joking. Like slide me under men fucking so I could get that like classic under the fucking fuck shot.
Were you ever sprayed with juices?
I absolutely was.
Did you keep your mouth closed or were you into it?
I did. I don't think I ever did it again. That was the last time I did that trick. It was like I kind of jumped the shark with that one and there was no going back.
Okay, well, a lot of times we leave the sluttiest stories to the paywall, but I think you have too many to give, and that's an incredible part of your memoir. I hope your book is currently being written, because to be on your back on a skateboard underneath penetration at Treasure Island Media, no less. I mean, you have lived a life.
I can't be the first and only girl in New York to have done that. I'm sure I'm not blazing any trail here, but it was a fun time. It was wild.
Well,
it was insane, but it was fun.
That's incredible. Did you ever, I guess the next question that's begging to be asked is, did you ever sleep with any of the porn performers?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I was 21. Yeah, absolutely. But like never on set, never on the job. And I always had to hide it from my boss. There was like two or three folks I met where it was a bit flirtatious, but you obviously don't, you know what I mean? Cause you're at work. So you're like,
watching
them fuck. So you're kind of getting an unfair, preview. But, yeah, there were a couple of people I kept in touch with. There are a couple of people I became like very good Judies with, which is very funny. Like just talk about Survivor, text about really dumb sexual health shit.
Yeah.
I will say I learned about prep through that job because I was talking to someone that I had worked with on set a few weeks prior, and he was in New York. We just went out to dinner and he was like, oh, are you on prep? And I was like, fall of 2012 or like maybe winter of like 2013. So it was like very new.
Really new.
Yeah. So honestly, I mean, I think I learned the most about sexual health I ever learned in my life, being friends with porn performers in the 2010s.
I can only imagine. I remember it being so divisive when prep first came out, and it's so interesting to think about that now, because I remember at the time thinking, well, why would anyone consider prep to be a bad thing? Like it's enabling sluttery. It's like, no, it's actually just protecting a community, and there's nothing bad about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think we're seeing similar stuff with DoxyPep right now. I think there's like this sort of like knee-jerk backlash to anything that isn't like condoms or abstinence. And I mean, I grew up Catholic. I fully understand. I did the narrative. It wasn't for me, but but yeah, I don't know. I think it also comes with like knowledge and understanding that like these things don't fix everything or can't prevent everything, but like,
right,
you know, they're tools that we have in our arsenal, and I think they're really valuable. I've never understood that.
Oh, 100%. It's changed my life in only positive ways. But since you did reference the Catholic upbringing, it's a part of my job as a gay journalist to go back into Gabe Gonzalez as a young queer. You're in Central Florida. You are out or not is question one. And question two is, did you have your first boy kiss in the state, in the Sunshine State, or did you wait till you escaped?
If you had asked 14-year-old Gabe Gonzalez if he was in the closet, he would have told you, I'm fully straight, like confidently committed to the bit. He's a student of Stanislavski, so he's going method. Okay.
He's living it
every day. He's in the role. Okay. From the outside, though, it would have been pretty obvious. I was a gay child. Like, there's very little I think I was doing to hide it.
What was your gayest interest as a closet case kid?
Shakira. But, like, early Shakira. Like, I'm not talking, like pre-blonde Shakira, okay? Shakira, yeah, which was singing in Spanish and looked like Alanis Morissette. Like, the Shakira that they show Daniela in the Cat's Eye documentary to be like, you should dye your hair dark.
Yeah,
the Shakira they used to brainwash that girl, that was my Shakira. Like, that was my... I absolutely loved that era.
Is that why Daniela speaks to me so specifically every time? She's got the it factor, hun.
it's that Latina from the South. It's like the Atlantic South, kind of. The Georgia, Florida Latinas are not, they're not fucking around. They're like gymnasts, dancers, lawyers, doctors. They're everything. They're wild.
And serving face the entire time.
Exactly, yeah.
So you are obsessed with Shakira. You're closeted, but people are kind of clocking you. Were you a theater kid or did you not partake?
I was very much a theater kid. Like, really, really, really. My parents tried to push me into, like, soccer and baseball, and I hated it. I, like, fully hated it, would not commit. So they caved, and I joined a theater called the Orlando Youth Theater for a while. I don't know if they're still around. Their most famous graduate was Mandy Moore. And so at the time, they were like, you know, Mandy Moore did this play here 4 years ago, and we're going to do it again.
I
was like,
I hope it's the most serious, like, Ibsen. I just want to picture Mandy Moore at the Orlando Children's Theater.
Well, it was a production of 42nd Street with 12 to 14-year-olds. You know what
even
I mean,
Mike? Better, even better. Also, you need to know you're the second person to bring up Mandy Moore on this podcast. Ginger Minj did plays with Mandy Moore in Florida growing up, so the crossover here is fucking wild.
It makes so much sense. We all went through the same evil vortex of theater.
The new 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon is the 3 degrees of Mandy Moore.
How many theater faggots do we need till we get to Mandy Moore? That's the big question. That's what I want.
That's the big question. Yeah. Oh my god. Did you so you did this theater program in Orlando. Did you end up having any gay experiences?
No. I think it was in high school I did. I think in high school we did a lot of plays and there weren't gay people in my school that were in the plays. It was like very much me and some of the jocks that they had recruited or like a boy from chorus. And then there were also some really incredible actors. Like I went to high school with Danae Benton. I went to the Edinburgh Fringe Fest with Danae Benton when we were doing A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Wow. Oh, so you were like a legit theater kid.
I mean, I was around very legit theater people. I loved it. I was very, very dedicated. I even did it in college for a little bit. Like, I did a main stage production in college. But, like, for me, going to Edinburgh in high school was wild. And that was sort of, that and speech and debate wild. Were sort of my little outlets. So I would leave the state. I would travel to, like, a speech and debate invitational or, like, travel for stuff. And when I was outside the confines of Florida, I would feel safe making out with people. But within the state. Within the state, I was a little too. It took me a really long time.
When did you lose your virginity, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh yeah. I guess like the first time. Oh, actually, this is a good story. This is a really good story. Okay.
For the rest of this interview, head to Substack linked in the description. You can also watch bonus episodes with Mikey Graceffa from Death Becomes Her, Isaiah Rutledge, Sunset Boulevard's G-Min Moon. We have Derek Cage, Patrick, Nick, Thanos, Mark. They're all hot. The stories are amazing, and you should go check it out at substack.com/@EricWills, linked in the description. I love you. Bye.